think all the I thank all of those who worked on setting up this retreat and for even thinking to ask me to share on step one. And I don't know that anyone knew that, but step one was the most difficult of all the steps for me. So it is so appropriate that I share on step one. Just to give you a brief summary of why I belong in these rooms, I was a volume eater and I just had no bottom, absolutely no bottom. And I will show you a picture of me, and it was a New Year's Eve with my older brother. And that was me. And I stopped weighing at 315 pounds. The other picture of me is when I took my great nephew and his children to Disney. I needed a wheelchair because I could not walk the distance. It was so mortifying to have to order a wheelchair for more than 300 pounds. It was mortifying, but that is my past. And today I'm 175 pounds lighter, and I did not enter program until my 67th year of life. So as you see, I truly could qualify as being a compulsive overeater because I ate like that from when I was off of baby food, so my mother told me. So from a toddler to 67, I was owned by food. And that's what qualifies me to sit in this chair as a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. And the references, just because I find it easier to tell you from the get-go where I got my information, I used the Big Book Dictionary to define powerlessness, because I wanted you all to understand where I'm coming from with what words I use. I use the AA 12 and 12, chapter one on step one. And of course, I used the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, our guide to our steps. And I started with the forward to the fourth edition. That's where it begins with our powerlessness and the first 43 pages. So that's chapters one, two, and three. And those will be things that I refer to with that will be incorporated in my talk today and my share with you. It's interesting to see what the definition of powerlessness is. And I'm reading it just so you understand, and I don't dilute it at all the way I used to do things. Powerlessness, being defenseless, ineffective, lacking strength, power, or authority. Now, step one, I was powerless over, as the book says, alcohol, but for me it was food, and my life had become unmanageable. I did not believe that I was lacking strength. I used to sing that song, I am woman, and I was a force. I was a force. And I could handle anything. I could do anything. and I lived that way for over 6 decades. And I believed it in my heart. I truly believed it. The interesting part is I was a woman of faith, but I didn't understand. I truly did not understand what this faith meant to me. Yes, I did all the ritualistic things of what faith tells us to do. I prayed like a robot. And every morning I would get up and I would give my higher power that I call God my list of to-dos. Oh, yes, I was a great controller. That was wonderful. Today I need blah, 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 blah. I gave him that list. And then what did I do? I locked him in the closet and I went out and did what I wanted. And I lived like that every single day for 67 years. And unfortunately, I guess it's unfortunate, although I find it fortunate because I feel being a compulsive overeater was a gift. And I never understood. People said grateful. I thought, who the heck is grateful? I was over 300 pounds. I stopped weighing at 315. Who could be grateful for that weight? They have to be nuts. Well, I was nuts. And I didn't fit the way that people suggested in my OA meetings. So I left because I compared myself. They said they owed money. They didn't have successful careers. I had a career that knocked your socks off. I was a nurse and I climbed the ladder and I was running the hospital. You see, that fulfilled my character defect of Madame Full Charge. I was in charge. I was responsible for lives. So therefore, that encouraged me to tell everybody what to do and how to do it. See, I was an expert. I had credentials. Those credentials showed me you have the authority. So you wonder why I was a little bit confused with God. You see, I thought he was there to serve me. He was there to do what I told him, just like everybody else. I told my staff what to do. I told my family what to do. I told them how to raise their children, everything. And the AA 12 and 12 says that no one wants to admit complete defeat. No one. So when someone suggested that I was a compulsive overeater, I told them, you are nuts. I can control. I can control my food. I'm not going to admit defeat. And so I lived that way and yo-yoed up and down the scales, tried everything, went to spas, lost weight, gained weight, although I never, never got to a normal weight, ever. And I rejected this program early on because I knew I had to lose 100 pounds or more. And I totally rejected that I belonged in these rooms. And I, as the book says, I balked. I was not going to admit anything. So, the AA 12 and 12 also says, until an alcoholic, so humbles himself, his sobriety, if any, will be precarious. No real happiness. Wow, that was a lot for me to chew on, because humble, I didn't know. I thought humility was, oh no, oh, don't give me the credit. Give my staff the credit. Oh, I'm just behind the scenes. You see, I made small of myself, but meanwhile, I was a bully. I was pushing them and nagging them and everyone. But yet, when it came to the facade, the outside appearance, I wanted to act. Oh no, not me, not poor me. I'm just a working woman. But I didn't truly believe that. As Bill W. and in Appendix 4, the last sentence says, AA speaks the language of the heart in all its power and simplicity. Now, as a nurse, when I would assess my patients, it was interesting because I used to say, you need to have this medicine enter your body and you need to assimilate it. Well, today in program, I share with my sponsees, because when they first come in to get this first step, they have all these words they're telling me. And it's part of their mask that I wore for so many years. And I said, oh, that's so beautiful. That those words are so beautiful, so eloquent. But I don't want to hear that. I want to hear what's in your heart. What is running through your veins? What is it? What is it that's causing you to be a prisoner? I want to hear you speak from the heart. That is what honesty, step one, the principle, honesty, that's what it means to me. It's that digging deep. And you know, at 315 pounds, I buried a lot of that honesty. I buried it real good because I couldn't face it. I could not. I had to use that food to numb, to zone out everything. And it was only by working these steps that I realized I was dishonest. Now, if you, as the person who 12-stepped me, said, you are dishonest. You are a compulsive overeater. And I said, dishonest? Never. Never. I'm so honest, I would never steal. I didn't realize until I worked this step that the biggest dishonesty was to myself. I wouldn't open my heart to admit what I was feeling and why I was shoving that food in. Why I wanted to numb out every night and feel the pain. My legs were so swollen. My back was killing me. And I knew the food was hurting me because it was causing all that inflammation. But I couldn't stop. I couldn't. because I didn't want to face, I needed to numb, I needed to be anesthetized. And that's what the food did for me. You see, the big book tells us that we search for the effect of our substance. And my substance was affecting me tremendously. And what I didn't realize was that it was causing my friends, my family, my staff pain, because I was taking away their freedom by being a bully. A bully. And I called it leadership. You know, all the nice words. I'm a fierce leader. Look at my department. It's wonderful. Look at this, all the outside people that came in to credential. Oh, yes, accolades up the kazoo. But I was a hard driver. And that is what I carried through into everything. And it took this young woman who was an anorexic and a bulimic. I knew her because she was a friend of my niece. It took her at a family party to have the courage. Now, at this family party, I was there for the first time I was out because my food nearly killed me. I had developed cancer and I had quit my first job and I was going to look for another. And I decided, oh, let me go for a physical. I really didn't want to go for a physical because I delayed it. 5 years I delayed it because I didn't want to hear the doctor say, oh, how did you get so fat? So I delayed my health care, but I knew I wanted to start a new job closer to home, and I was not getting along with my CEO, and I said, let me get out of here. So I resigned, and I went for a physical. Well, like everything else, the doctor said, so how are you? I haven't seen you in a long time. And I said, I'm fine. My standard answer, I'm fine. And he said, what happened to you? How did you get so fat? I don't want to hear it. I can handle it. I can lose it. Just do what you have to. And let's get on with this. And let me get on with my life. So I was even dictating to my doctor. And so he did. He did my workup, and a few days later, he called me and said, Carmela. Now, this was a doc I had worked with for over 20 years. He said, you have cancer. And I said, okay. So when are you going to operate? He said, me? Operate on you? Oh, no. He said, I've worked with you. I know you. I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to treat you with radiation. I said, oh, no, no, no. I've worked with you long enough to know that the first treatment is surgery. And he said, you cannot withstand 6 hours of surgery. I will kill you, and I'm not going to do it. If you want surgery, find another doc. And so I did. And surgery that took 6 hours, and 13 years later, I am cancer-free. Another miracle, my friends, another miracle. My higher power was taking care of me, and I didn't even realize it. And the other gift was, I had so many complications that for 3 years, because of my obesity and because of all of my complications, I needed 2 more surgeries to repair. My entire abdomen was open. You could put 2 fists in my abdomen. I had to go through the humiliation of having a nurse come every day to pack me and nearly dying. And when this young lady 12-stepped me, it was the first time I was out because, of course, when I recovered from all these complications, where did I go? Right back to the food. You see, I had to numb. I had to control. And when I'm sitting at this family party and she had the nerve to come over and tell me I was a compulsive overeater as I offered her coffee and a piece of dessert, I wanted to call the waitress because I was on my second dessert, not one, but two. And she said, Carmela, no, just buy this book. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. We call it the big book. Just come to one meeting. I said, no. You're one of those nuts. I went to one of those meetings. I didn't identify with anybody. I compared and nope. I'm not one of those cuckoos. I can handle it. But then she was a wise young woman. And she said, the doctor's opinion says you have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. Oh man, did she hook me on those lines, because that made sense. It appealed to my scientific knowledge. Allergy, I understood allergy. I had lots of them. And she said, you have to put down your allergic substance. And she told me what hers were. And I realized how sugar had owned me so much. I used to go to work. They thought I was the greatest leader in town. All of my areas of responsibility every day got treats. And not for my staff, but for Carmela. Because when she made her rounds, she had to have a little something here or a little something there. And oh, Carmela, the staff would say, let's put on a fresh pot of coffee. Have a little something. Oh, thank you so much. And a little something and a little something on all the areas of responsibility I had. The bakery loved me. The bagel store loved me because they knew I was a steady customer and I was supplying my staff, not out of the goodness of my heart or generosity. Yeah, they benefited, but it was to satisfy my addiction. And when she told me, allergy, yes? Did you know food talks to you? It used to talk to me all the time. It would call me from the fridge if I had it in there. Oh, you know you want me. Call me from the closet. The interesting thing, though, was I never married. I never had any children biologically, but I did raise two boys. And their mom was sick, and I was gifted at the age of 35 to be given the gift. First, I was in the delivery room when they were born, and then to be able to take them home and have this beautiful infant in my life. That infant is now 44 years old, and his brother is 43 years old. And they were the first ones that witnessed my control and my anger and rage when they didn't do what I wanted them to do and behave the way I wanted them to be. And they were also the first ones I had to make amends to. But the gift was that I knew innocent love. And this woman was introducing me to a program that allowed me to know my higher power, my true relationship, when I started working these steps. And my sponsor did not wait until I got step one. We continued. We worked on to all the steps. But I can honestly tell you that it took me almost the full time of working all the other steps to truly, in my heart, get step one. That's why I say it was the most difficult. And in the doctor's opinion, the doctor writes, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. So I don't know what that means to you folks, but what I wrote when I read that in my book was, only God can fix me. That was the first time that I honestly understood powerlessness. It was the first time that I realized that God was my source of power. I never realized. Imagine being 67 years old, having a faith, functioning like a robot, and never realizing that. I have an older brother, and when I went into program and I was telling him some of these things, he said, where the heck were you when we were kids? He said, I knew that from when we were little. They taught us that in school because we went to religious school. And I said, yeah, I don't ever remember that. Of course not. I was a compulsive overeater from that time. My mind was closed. I was not open to any of this. The interesting part is that this program, that doctor's opinion, hooked me in and made me realize that I needed to put that substance down, because in Bill's story, I used to call myself Bill because my ego was as big as Bill's. Just like the song, I can do anything. And it took this woman telling me about this allergy and this obsession that made me open up and be willing. And once we are open and willing, that is when our higher power can work. Because when I was thinking only of Carmela's power, I was blocked. I was encased. I couldn't hear anything. I didn't see anything. Yes, of course I saw, but I didn't truly see and I didn't truly hear until that substance was out of me and I was willing and honest. And that's when the relationship began. And as Bill, I had to smash my ego and humble myself. And I truly understood what humility was. It's being right-sized, acknowledging that I was given talents. Talents. That is what got me to my career. That is what enabled me to care for patients, lead staff, get the education I did. and have the role I did as a nurse, and then as a nurse administrator and a leader. It wasn't Carmela. It was the gift I was given. And boy, did that ever hit me like a ton of bricks. That is when I began to understand powerlessness and willing to admit and stop thinking that I, Carmela, was the greatest. And you better listen to me, baby, because I know what it's about. And the reason I wore this scarf today, there's a reason. It's because this scarf was given to me not for any special occasion, but was given to me by the second born great nephew that I cared for when his mom was sick. He's 43. And the biggest, he bought me this because he watched me when I was recovered. When I first was recovered, and I made many, many mistakes, I dragged him throughout this city of New York. I live in Manhattan. Lower Manhattan had lots of AA meetings. He was addicted to alcohol and cocaine. And I dragged him as a young adult to meetings. And the sweat that his armpits, and I introduced him to fellows. And they said to me, Carmela, you gotta leave him alone, because I wanted him to get it. See, so I was thinking I was living in the steps, but I was not recovered, because I still thought I could get him recovered. Well, I soon realized that powerlessness included, maybe the food was down, maybe the 175 pounds I lost, but I still had that insanity. And God still had to work in me. And so I continued working this book day by day and reading further on as I sponsored. Chapter 2, there is a solution. And right then and there, I found hope. Hope. The first line, thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill, nearly all have recovered. I had to let him find his own. And he just bought me this. And I witnessed him this past weekend. I was with him and his 14-year-old son. And he said to his son, I would like you and Aunt Carmela to be at my 5th anniversary meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, because he's 5 years clean. That is another miracle. That is another gift that my higher power saw fit to give me. That is joy. And when he bought me this, I said, what are you wasting your money? He said, no, it's not a waste. I saw it, I thought of you, and I bought it for you. And today, he calls me every day on his way to work. Today I text him, I said, please don't call, because he is working today. I said, because I'm going to be on a meeting and I'm wearing your scarf because I need to feel the hug of your love while I'm speaking to these fellows. That is a gift of being powerless and knowing where I get my strength from every day. And that is only the gift that I receive by working this book. And when we move on to chapter 3, oh man, in chapter 3, that's, I think every line in chapter 3 is underlined for me in this book. It's so powerful because chapter 3, and I learned through many of our fellows, one of which is our panelist, that our disease from Richard Peabody in The Common Sense of Drinking, that our disease is permanent, progressive, and fatal. And it took me to acknowledge it through my powerlessness that I was in this disease. And it was only by my willing to admit that powerlessness and the fact that the words that I can say, I am a compulsive overeater. It was only doing those things that my higher power gave me the gift. And, you know, I say I have 8 years of recovery. But last night, I received a phone call from a person coming back from relapse. Her sponsor gave her my number to call. And she's been in program about 10 years. She's also a nurse. And not living anywhere in New York area, completely the other side of the country. And she called and she has 5 days of abstinence. And I was working on what I was going to present. And I said to her, there's nothing like life to show you true powerlessness. And your relapse is part of that life journey. So you're telling me you have only 5 days. And I'm telling you, yes, I have 8 days of putting the food down. But in reality, I have 1 day. 1 day. And that is today. Because yesterday is gone and tomorrow is not promised. So I have today. So when I opened my eyes this morning, what did I do? I connected before I moved out of bed. And I said, good morning, God. Would you be kind enough to give me one more day? Because that is my source of power. I must plug into that. Now, it's funny because when my sponsor brought me through the steps, she said, now, Carmela, don't forget you're going to be living in 10, 11, and 12. And I said, like a good sponsee? Yes, yes, yes. Okay, okay. But I realized I must connect daily, every day, because every day is a new day. And if I'm giving that gift of life, which God chose to give me by freeing me from cancer and making me realize during that journey of 3 years of complications that I wanted to live. Imagine I didn't realize I wanted to live. I took it for granted. But only this step taught me that I wanted to live. In my heart, I wanted one thing. I was a 315-pound starving person. Now, you're going to say, starving? Give me a break. And I want you to know what you're starving for. Because when I found this program and when I realized I was powerless and that there was a power greater than I realized I didn't have to starve anymore because I am loved, and that is what I was starved for. Sure, I held hostages. Sure, I had a big family and lots of friends, but like Bill, I was a lone wolf howling on that mountain. And I was starved for love. And for today, food is not my answer, but my relationship, my powerlessness, my leaning on my higher power and his walking with me instead of being locked in that closet. That is what carries me through every day. And yes, sometimes I'm fearful or I have to face life's challenges, which I did 2 weeks ago today. I had to bury my 57-year-old niece's husband, whose nickname was Macho Man. He was a New York City police officer who thought he was invincible, who got COVID and died of COVID. And I watched his three daughters pray for their father's life. And I prayed, God, you know what has to be. You know what is good. Please love this man, and I will accept whatever, because I know you, not me, you will guide and protect his family and him. And when his oldest daughter contacted me with the tape from the physician, and she said, Aunt Carmela, would you listen to this and tell me if I understand what this doctor is trying to tell us? It was the hardest thing I had to do. But that was life. And I prayed, God, please let me not push my will, but let me listen with an open heart. And I listened to these doctors' words, and they were so loving and kind to my family. And without forcing them or telling them, he told them there was no more hope and that he needed to be taken off life support. And he needed to die. And God gave me the strength and the wisdom to tell his oldest daughter. That doctor was kind and loving, but all of you must take your time and accept the will of God for yourselves. I cannot force you, and the doctor is not forcing you. You must make your own mind up. And that is called free will. And that is another gift that I've been given. And my niece's husband was given free will. And he chose to be Macho Man. He chose to protect her and live his life the way he chose. And unfortunately, his family is paying the hurt, the sorrow of the loss of this beautiful man. But he had free choice. And now I pray he's at peace. And they are accepting. It's amazing to see, because I was with them up until a few days ago. And it's amazing to see their peace and joy. They are at peace because they accepted it. And that is what this program has taught me, how to live life, admitting powerlessness, leaning on a power that is greater than I. And every day I must do that, as well as work all the other steps, 10, 11, and 12 every day. So today, how do I live? Real simple, my friends and fellows on this journey. Instead of being a bully and controlling. I'm not going to throw you a pillow in that hole of despair, because that's what the food does. It puts us in that dark hole. And I'm not throwing the pillow down there to make you comfortable. Instead, I'm throwing a ladder down. And this was not an original. I heard this from one of our wonderful fellows on Vision. She said, throw that ladder down and let each and every one climb up as they see fit and connect with their higher power. And get that love and understanding. And as our illustrious fellow that will speak later on today, no, probably tomorrow, has said to me frequently, and why do you think that you will get all of this? And he says, because you are loved by a power greater than yourself, and he wants you to be happy, joyous, and free. And the way our disease is progressive, permanent, and fatal, our recovery must be progressive. So each day we must grow and live in the sunlight of the spirit. And with that, I pass. And thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you, Carmela. Carmela, do you have any, I think that we have about 10 minutes left for your specific step one. Are you open to some question and answer?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, so for those of you who are with us, if you want to raise your hand, if you can, and I can call on you if you have any questions for Carmela. Oh, Tina L, go ahead.
Hi, Carmela. Thank you. That was beautiful. So heartfelt. You talked of three gifts that the program gave. The first one in step one was abstinence. The second one that you've come across in your steps as you go is recovery. And you also said one more thing, one more gift, and I don't know what it was.
Oh, really? It's two more, Tina.
Okay.
The next one was being 13 years cancer-free. And that was a gift because I didn't even know that I had it. And the last one was the recovery in Narcotics Anonymous of 5 years being clean of the boy that I raised, who's 43 years old, and the invitation he gave me to attend his fifth anniversary and the willingness that he's willing to have his 14-year-old son there as well. That is a true gift. So there were many gifts I received, and those were the ones that are the highlights of my life.
I have a question. Hi, Carmela, yes. Susan, recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for your beautiful share. If somebody is new here today or they are struggling and can't get step one, you know, you said how you came in. What were the first few things perhaps that you were told that really helped you in the beginning other than opening the book? I mean, obviously opening the book is great, getting a sponsor, but can you speak to those who might be struggling today of what to do with themselves?
Yes, because initially, Susan, I did not get it, as I well told you. And the interesting part was, if you are truly desperate enough, the first thing you need to do is ask yourself, the way I asked myself, Do you really want to live? Or are you ready to die? You see, in disease, I was ready to die. I just thought, nah, so what? I got my food. It keeps me happy. I'll die, no problem. Nobody's going to miss it, no problem. The kids are grown. Everything's done. So what? And the reality was, I wanted to live. So they need to ask themselves, do you really want to live? That's the first question. And the second one is, do you think you're worth it? Because I used to buy all these luxurious suits so no one would notice that I was 300 pounds. I wore the makeup, the mask, everything. So no, I thought no one could see. But I truly didn't think I was worth it. But today, I know how to set a boundary. I know I am worth it because of one thing. I know how loved I am. And that was only through step one and this book and working these steps. But my intro in was, do I want to live and am I worth it? Those are the two questions. And you need to ask yourself those questions and be honest with yourself. And that's what got me in. That's what let me accept that woman telling me I was a compulsive overeater and the doctor's opinion. That's what did it for me. I wanted to live. Thank you for your question.
Hi, Carmela. My name is Gwen and I'm a compulsive eater carb addict. Can you talk a little bit about the role your sponsor or the other members of the fellowship played in the part of your recovery? I hear your story, but it, you know, other people must have had influence over you. So can you talk about the role of a sponsor in program, please?
Absolutely. My very first sponsor, who I still communicate with today, 8 years later, I met at my second meeting. It was a step meeting. And this is how the mind changes and the mind works, how we react as a newbie in program. I was going to a step meeting here in Manhattan. It was a face-to-face meeting. I was walking along. I had never been to that meeting. It was in a hospital. I was walking along. It was a rainy day. And this woman was walking ahead of me and she opened the door. And you realize what our characteristic is, we are poor me victims. You know, that was my personality. And she opened the door and she was slim and her step was quick. And I'm waddling in and I'm following her. And I said, hi, I'm looking for the OA meeting. I'm Carmela and I need help. And she turned around and looked at me and she gave me her name. And she said, we all need help. That's why we're here. And she said, my name is, and I lost 200 pounds. Right then and there, she hooked me. Because you see, food was going to hook us. I walked behind her. If she put that right foot first, I put that right foot first. I was walking because I wanted what she had. I wrote her number down because it was in the We Care book. I called her. I asked her to sponsor me. And she said, oh, I was eventually going to get to you, she said. And so she was my sponsor. Unfortunately, she did not use the big book. And she gave me these list of questions to answer. So when this young woman talked about the big book and told me of the doctor's opinion, that brought me to another stage. And that brought me to vision. And that brought me, when I gave my name in as a new person at Vision, I received a call. And the young woman that called me said, "You are white knuckling and you need a step sponsor," because I was hanging on to abstinence, but it was all self-will that was doing it. So I needed a step sponsor. And that is where I got my step sponsor. And that is how that sponsor brought me through and explained things to me. And the gift of neutrality came through working these steps. So that is what my first sponsor, she got me interested. She got me willing because she had a 200-pound weight loss. But she couldn't give me the neutrality because her method of sponsoring was not giving it to me. I was holding on. It was all self-will and self-knowledge. And you know, this book tells us that will do nothing for us. So the gift was reaching out to a fellow, giving that name out and getting a call back. So we as fellows calling newcomers, that's a gift we give to them. And we as sponsors, bringing people through the steps and working, that's another gift we give. And just recently,
sorry, Carmela, you only have like 1 minute left before we need to move on to the next speaker.
Okay. So that, I hope, answers your question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Carmela. Thank you for sharing with us. So it is 9 o'clock. We're going to move right along to step 2.